Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. On day 11 of the French Open, it has been a quarterfinal fest. Four men's quarterfinals, two women's quarterfinals, loads of tennis to get our teeth into today. I'm David Law. I'm not in Paris. Catherine Whittaker is. She's just had her room service arrived. Does it involve cheese?
It doesn't involve cheese, but only because I've already eaten so much cheese.
Okay.
Yeah, I've already had one cheese board today, and it was a big one. So my room service order only involves chocolate cake and a glass of wine, and yeah.
Excellent.
I'm tired, David. I'm refueling.
Yeah, all the food groups covered there. Five a day, yeah. Absolutely fine. She's had her five cheese boards for the day.
I had a small salad earlier, so it's all fine.
I see.
Had a small portion of green beans as well. You know, I'm covered.
Yeah. All right. Fine. Okay. Enough nutritional talk here on the Tennis Podcast. You've had your fill of that, everybody. Let's get into the tennis, Catherine. First and foremost, I think the thing that comes out of the whole day for me is, yet again, we seem to be talking about Novak Djokovic and what's wrong with him. He lost in straight sets today against a guy he'd never lost to before, Dominic Thiem. He was 4-2 up in the first set, cruising, frankly. Looked just like all the other matches he's had against Dominic Thiem. And then he lost in straight sets, losing the third set 6-love. I don't understand.
I would disagree that he was cruising. I think it was more of a match than that. It was certainly a very different match to the one they played in the Rome semi-finals a couple of weeks ago, after which I was thinking, maybe this is just one of those matchups that doesn't work for Dominic Thiem. You know, it doesn't matter how well he plays, it just is never going to work. He's always going to be at too big a disadvantage against the way that Novak Djokovic plays. And it was a very different match to that today. And yes, it was 4-2 up, and yes, I absolutely didn't expect it to go the way that it ended up going from there, but I just would disagree that he was cruising. I still felt at 4-2 that it was a very, very tight match and that Dominic Thiem was playing some sensational tennis. However, and I don't want to take anything from Dominic Thiem, because he is a glory to watch in the sort of form he was today. He was in full flow. I mean, just the most watchable tennis you could ever imagine, really. I mean, I defy anybody with any passing interest in tennis not to be able to watch that and think, yeah, I want to watch more of this, because it is just a glory to behold. But even Dominic Thiem, towards the end of the second set and throughout the third, looked pretty bewildered at what was going on, I think. You know, John McEnroe called it tanking. He used the word tanking in Eurosport commentary. I'm not sure I would go that far, because I think the line between just sort of not caring and specifically actively trying to lose, or not actively making the decision to not try. I think the lines there are so blurred. I don't think it was anything as specific as that. I just think there was nothing there either.
Yeah, that's it. He was bereft, wasn't it?
Behind the eyes, in the arm, in the body. There was just, he knew he had nothing to call upon there. And I did a piece to camera with Mats Wilander, who had been courtside throughout the match. I did a piece to camera with him at the end of the match. And I said, look, it's one thing to be beaten by Dominic Thiem. There's no shame in that. I fully believe that he's going to be a French Open champion, if not this year, then probably next year or the year after. Look, there's no shame in being outplayed by Dominic Thiem on his day, even if you are the world number two. That's fine. There's no shame in not playing your best tennis. That's fine too. But I don't understand, or I was disappointed in the lack of defiance, the lack of resilience from Novak Djokovic. Where's that? Because you look at Andy Murray and he's struggling. He, possibly in tennis terms, actually, is struggling as much or if not more so than Novak Djokovic, actually. But mentally, he's trying desperately to fight through it. Whereas Novak Djokovic, actually, I think, is playing more or less a lot of the time slightly better tennis than Murray, but mentally it's not there, is it? He doesn't have the fight. And in the press conference afterwards, he was pretty, the word that Annabelle Croft used in the Eurosport studio was resigned, and I think that was a very good one. Not to say that he wasn't disappointed and sad and all the rest of it, but he didn't seem surprised or angry, or, you know, there weren't the extremes of emotion. There wasn't the, well, defiance. Defiance is the word that I keep coming back to. It's one we've used a lot about peak Novak Djokovic. And he was asked whether maybe some time off is what he needs. And he said, look, yeah, that's one of the things that I'm considering, basically. He said, there's a lot of things that I'm considering at the moment. And basically, he doesn't have any answers. He'll be back to some degree, without question. Mats Wilander thinks that he'll be back dominating the sport again. I am not convinced of that. I still think he'll probably win one or two more slams. I do. I think he is too good a player not to. But for the immediate and medium term, I don't know. I don't know what is going to happen for Novak Djokovic. I really don't.
Yeah, there are a few things here, in as much as it reminds me of when we were talking about Roger Federer's canister, that you decided he'd got one of those and that it needed to be replenished. And it has felt like that on and off, hasn't it, for a year, really, with Djokovic. It may just be that that moment drained him so totally that maybe the only way back is to do a Roger Federer and take 6 months off. That, and the moment I'm talking about is winning the French Open last year, that culmination of all that effort, all those years of trying to keep up with Nadal and Federer and make his own mark. And there he stood, the first man since Rod Laver to hold all four Grand Slam tournament titles at the same time. Maybe that was just too big a stretch for him to bounce back from and continue. And the last year would suggest that is part of it. It is still shocking to have seen him like that today. And I didn't like it. I don't like seeing him like that. I don't like seeing, we talked about this a few weeks ago, great athletes, champions, struggling and just looking so bereft. And there was another slightly throwaway line from McEnroe in the commentary when the camera went on to Pepe Imaz. And he said, you know, at times like this, you don't need a kind of love and peace type mentor. You're in the heat of battle. You need to be able to, you said the word defiance. The other one we always used with him was resilience. And those are the two things he seems to be lacking right now. I just wonder whether he's just pushed himself beyond the limit of being able to call on those two things. And it'll be very interesting, his next steps, because he's not scheduled, as things stand, to play any grass competitively before Wimbledon. He could try and enter Queens. He could try and enter Halle. He could try and enter one of the other events. He did sort of say, it's possible I might. He obviously doesn't know. just at the moment. But the other big contrast for me between him and Murray right now, the quotes Murray gave before his quarter final against Nishikori, he spoke to the British press. He did that sort of extra segment with them, and he talked about how Lendl just got him back to basics. It was all about just do the simple things, just work for every point, make yourself hard to beat. Don't worry about changing too many things. Just do those few things that you do really well, which make you very difficult to beat. And it seems to me that Djokovic has lost his way. He doesn't quite know how to go about it at the moment. It's a very strange situation.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I've no idea whether he's going to play a warm-up tournament in advance of Queens. He doesn't know. So he genuinely doesn't know. That was my take-home message from his post-match press conference. So there's no way I can guess something that isn't even in his mind yet. I really think he's bereft. That's a word we've used a couple of times. And just as when he was winning and dominating and it seemed it would ever be thus, we are all very guilty of feeling like a current situation is permanent and you sort of can't see a way out of it. And you think that this is how things are, you know, when Djokovic was dominating everything, it just, how could you not see him winning every Grand Slam for the near future? And at the moment, it feels like, how on earth can you see Novak Djokovic finding his way out of this? The woods feel so thick for him, you know, watching him play that 6-love final set against Dominic Thiem in a Grand Slam quarter final where he's the defending champion, where someone's trying to wrestle his trophy from him. You're thinking, how on earth, how bad must things be for you to be just limply donating it away? But things are so much more temporary in sport and in tennis than we ever feel in the moment, because things feel so big and important and permanent in the moment, but they're not. I as I say, I have my question marks about whether he will ever come back and dominate. I found it very surprising when Mats Wilander told me he thought he would, and I suppose I'm about to go on record and say that I disagree with Mats Wilander, but I have my doubts about whether he will dominate. But I cannot believe he won't win another slam or two. I really can't.
Time will tell, indeed. So we mentioned Andy Murray. He fought his way past Kei Nishikori. That was a funny old match, wasn't it? Because you mentioned Murray's form. In the first set, Nishikori dominated him, and Murray was quite listless at that time, but he found a way to win.
Yeah, look, it was a completely bizarre match. I had such high hopes, and I didn't expect to see a perfect world-beating Andy Murray today. I think he's still in a process and still trying to find his best tennis, but I didn't really know what I was watching for a set and a half. Yes, look, Kei Nishikori was great. His backhand is sublime at its best, and it really was sublime for that first set, but Andy Murray let it be sublime. I don't know what his game plan was. He was just pushing the ball. He was just pushing and giving Kei Nishikori this nice, clean ball to hit, and didn't seem to have any plan to take control of the rallies, and was getting involved in these long backhand exchanges. And Kei Nishikori's backhand is too good for that. You know, Andy Murray couldn't stand up to that, and he was the one being worn down. He was the one being pushed too far behind the baseline. And Nishikori was the one taking control of the points, and I just thought, either you just hope for a dip in Nishikori's form, which lo and behold came, or you're just, I don't know what you hope, or you have to change something, because you're not going to win this way, Andy. And lo and behold, suddenly lots of things changed at once. Nishikori's form did dip, and I do find him still mentally disappointing. I do think he's mentally frail, you know. In that fourth set, he had his, you know, fourth set, okay, you're a breakdown, but you're in a fourth set, you've dominated large portions of the match, you're still in this, Kay. And there he was with his head between his knees, with the towel over his head. I mean, the worst imaginable body language. I mean, if you looked up defeated in the dictionary, you'd have seen a picture of Kei Nishikori in that moment at that change of ends. And I think the moment when early on in the second set, when Andy Murray was given a second warning for time taken between serves and was docked a first serve for that, and it fired him up. He had a little bit of an argument with Carlos Ramos in the chair. That was precisely what he needed. You could see him latch onto it like, oh, this is what I need to put some fire in my belly. I need to pick a fight. And there it was. And I still don't think he suddenly locked into brilliant tennis after that. He just suddenly found the competitor in him that Novak Djokovic was unable to find today. And look, I wasn't brilliantly impressed with Murray's tennis at any stage today, I have to say. I don't think it was his best, but I was brilliantly impressed with the competitor in him. And I think that was all the more brought to the fore by the contrast with Djokovic. And that's not to say that Djokovic isn't a brilliant competitor at his best. Of course he is. But we take it for granted in these people. And the fact that someone as great as Djokovic, we've seen him do what he did today, it makes you realise you can't take this stuff for granted. It is a monumental effort that these guys put in to win when they're not playing their best. That is incredibly difficult. It'd be so easy to go, oh, gosh, I can't bear it. I just want to throw in the towel. This isn't me. And Andy Murray is gritting his teeth and winning ugly a lot of the time at the moment, to coin a Brad Gilbertism. And that warrants a lot of credit, I think.
The problem for him in the next round is that he's going to be up against a guy who is completely where he wants to be. Stan Wawrinka, you mentioned earlier in the tournament that it's unusual to see Stan Wawrinka hitting form so early in a slam. He hasn't dropped a set. He thrashed Marin Cilic today, who also hadn't dropped a set until today. And Wawrinka Murray is a rematch of their semi last year. And I was trying to find this quote. I couldn't find it anywhere, but I seem to recall Magnus Norman saying after that match that it was the best anybody had played against Stan on clay, and as though it was one of the best performances he's ever seen, really. I'm pretty sure it was Magnus Norman who said that. Murray was fabulous in that semi last year. Wawrinka feels like the favourite, though. And actually, you'll be delighted to know, Catherine, I've run a pole vault on this. And actually, usually, I mean, I think because we've got more British listeners than any other country, we do tend to find there is obviously a leaning towards Murray when we run these things. Well, this one is so far in Wawrinka's favour. 56% of 748 votes have gone with Stan Wawrinka. What are your thoughts?
I think Stan Wawrinka is absolutely the favourite, the strong favourite. I spoke to him after his match today, his win over Marin Cilic, and boy, was he confident and relaxed, bullish even. I asked him whether this was the best clay court tennis he'd ever played, and he said yes, you know, which, given this is a guy that won the title 2 years ago, is pretty impressive. He was very explicit in explaining what he had learned from last year's match against Andy Murray and what he needed to do differently. And he described how aggressive Andy Murray was in last year's semi-final. And to be fair, not in any of the matches so far that Andy Murray has played in this tournament has he been anywhere close to as aggressive as he was in that match last year. Andy Murray at his best is an Andy Murray that's confident enough to step in and take the ball early. And I haven't seen much of that this tournament. It doesn't mean I don't think he's got it in him, because that kind of play is all about confidence. And he's in the semi-final of a Grand Slam. He's beaten Kei Nishikori and Juan Martín Del Potro. And those sorts of things bring confidence. I'm just saying I haven't seen it yet. What I've seen from Stan Wawrinka has blown me away. And this is a guy with a track record of having won here and beating the best players en route. And what I've seen so far is Wawrinka playing even better than he played in 2015. So he has to be the favourite.
Wow. Yeah, well, those are pretty strong words, because he obviously, when he got to the final in 2015, he was effectively unplayable. Although I do think there was a big difference between how he played in that final to the rest of the tournament. And the one reservation I would have from a Wawrinka perspective is Murray on this surface can put the ball in difficult places for him. He can stop him from setting his feet. That's what he did last year in that semi with genius skill. I remember it wasn't just about, I mean, there's no point in Andy Murray going toe-to-toe really with Wawrinka. He's got to, in the words of John McEnroe, give him a different ball to look at with every single shot, I think. And that could be the recipe for success. But yeah, Wawrinka, marginal favourite, but I don't know, I've got a feeling that Murray might take him out personally. Yeah. We'll see. We will see. I'll make my final call on that tomorrow.
You had a feeling, David, that Elena Svitolina was going to win the title, though, didn't you? So, or no, Kuznetsova, even worse.
Yeah. Oh, Catherine, listen, my feelings are an utter irrelevance this fortnight. I've lost my amazing knack of brilliantly predicting every result correctly. That amazing knack that I have just made up. The other person who was in awesome form was Rafael Nadal. Although he wasn't exactly stretched today, poor old Pablo Carreño Busta had to retire 2-love down in the second set. But Nadal has not dropped more than 4 games in his last 20 sets of tennis in Paris. It's just absurd.
Yeah, it's very difficult to know what to say to add to what we said after Nadal's last victory, because today was a complete irrelevance, really. Pablo Carreño Busta is a great player. I mean, look, even at his physical best, I didn't really give him a hope of challenging Nadal, and nor did any of the experts that I spoke to. So that has to be taken into consideration. However, Carreño Busta was suffering badly. I'm a bit unclear about specifically what was up with him, because it was obviously something in the stomach region. But when he went off court for the medical timeout and came back on, the strapping that he had there didn't seem to be sort of muscular strapping. It didn't wrap around his torso. It looked like it had some sort of surgery and had a sort of wound dressing on, you know, like it looked like a sort of hernia bandage. I'm quite sure you couldn't possibly attempt to play tennis with a hernia, but whatever was going on, it was hampering him significantly, and it makes the match one that's almost impossible to analyze. So what can I say, really, other than everything that I said after Nadal's last victory, is that, well, which is that he
more
looks
interesting,
sensational.
More interesting is Nadal team, really, isn't it? You can leave that till tomorrow if you like, but that's the match coming up.
Yeah, and I think it'll be cracking. I think the match in Rome sets it up brilliantly, because team crucially goes in knowing he can beat him, knowing he's improved with every match he's played against Nadal this season. And they've played 3 of them so far. Team eventually got the victory. It's over best of 5 sets. That immediately puts Nadal as the favourite, no matter how well team has been playing. But this is going to be a challenge for Nadal. And crucially, he hasn't been challenged yet. You know what? There's zero chance that Nadal is susceptible to complacency. Zero at all. He's not taking anything for granted at all. However, you know, he hasn't been challenged. He hasn't had the fight brought out of him yet. And that's something that, look, it's difficult with Nadal, because it's always at the fore with him, isn't it? It doesn't take much to bring it out. But it's not ideal. Usually what you say about winning a slam is that at some point you need to have had a test along the way. Usually that tends to be the case. And of course there are exceptions, and Nadal has been an exception in the past. But I do think it could be interesting. Team, at his best, is capable of beating anyone. Without question, he is a world-beating, magnificent tennis player at his best.
I would say that he is not capable of beating Nadal on clay if Nadal is at his best. I just don't think he would be allowed to. We will see. We will see. Catherine Pittaker is going to ponder that for tomorrow's show. And what we're going to do right now, because we've obviously still got the women's quarterfinals to go through, but Catherine has got that cake and wine that she just needs to have a little bit of a sample of. So let's just let her do that, and then we'll talk about the women's draw.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Catherine's just wolfed down that cake. Karolina Pliskova against Caroline Garcia was close. Actually, it was close. It was competitive. But ultimately, it always felt to me like Pliskova was going to win. I don't know about you. It was 7-6, 6-3, I think, in the end. And I always felt that Pliskova would end up winning. What did you think?
Yeah, it was really difficult. I did too, deep down. But everybody here was so keen to big it up and big up the French chances. And everybody was willing Garcia to do well, because obviously it's wonderful for a tournament if a home player reaches the latter stages, and she's done, frankly, very well, Garcia, to reach the quarterfinals, and she seems to be just starting to fulfil some of her potential. Of course, Andy Murray said she's a future world number one. What was that, 3 years ago, maybe? And they've been a tough 3 years since then, in the singles game, at least. But Pliskova is a better player at the moment. It doesn't mean that Garcia doesn't have the potential to be as good as or a better player than Pliskova, but at the moment she is a better player, even with the clay neutralising her strengths. And today, in the windy conditions, she was able to hit through them better. It was sort of quite similar to Bishinsky-Miladinovic yesterday, in that everyone was kind of expecting the match to be about the tension and the occasion and what's at stake, and also with the conditions factored in. And yes, all those things were present, but actually what it came down to was who was the better tennis player on the day, and it was just Pliskova. I don't think Garcia crumbled. I think she played a decent enough game. I just think Pliskova is the better, more seasoned player at this level these days. But it was only a year ago, remember, that Pliskova was the massive underachiever at Grand Slam level, enormous underachiever. It wasn't until the US Open last year that she got past the third round at a Grand Slam, and my, how the tables have turned.
Yeah, very true. It wasn't like that in the other match. It wasn't just about who's the better tennis player, because Simona Halep really struggled early on against Elena Svitolina, who was by far the better player. 6-3, 5-1, I think it was, at one stage in that match. I mean, and yet I still don't really feel that it was... I don't watch the match and think, that's a choke. even though the scoreline looks like a choke. I think Halep deserves great credit for that comeback. She didn't give in. She kept scrapping, and she had no form early on at all. And then she found a form and reeled Svitolina back in. Svitolina had the match point in the tiebreak, I think it was, but it was ultimately Halep who levelled the match and then just ran away with it 6-love in the third. That, at that point, Svitolina had just got nothing left, I don't think. No belief left in herself. What was your sense?
Yeah, I agree. I don't see it as a choke as much as the scoreline might suggest that. I think it was sort of the reverse of that in a way. It was almost a preemptive choke from Simona Halep. I mean, even Svitolina playing her best, which she was for large portions of the match, she was sensational. And I do think she will be a finalist and probable champion here one day. Halep should have been going toe-to-toe to her, even with her, even at her best. You know, she shouldn't have been 5-love down in the first set. She shouldn't have been 5-1 down in the second set. It was a preemptive choke from Halep, if that makes sense. And they're getting level in Halep then marching through the third set was not normal service resumed. That's not the right way of putting it, but you know what I mean. It was just leveling the playing field from what was a very bizarre start to the match, really. And I agree, Halep deserves enormous credit, and I do think possibly a year ago she wouldn't have won that match. And a lot has been made in the last few hours of what Halep said after Miami and how revealing she's been about how Darren Cahill walked away from her and said if they're to work together, he's demanding a better attitude from her. And you have to think that had he not done that, today's match would have been the sort of match that she might have thrown away.
Yeah, I know, I can believe that. So that leaves Pliskova now against Halep. The head-to-head is 4-1 in the favour of Simona Halep. Huge amount on this match, because if Pliskova beats Halep, Karolina Pliskova is the world number one. If Halep wins and goes on to win the title, she is world number one. So there's a heck of a lot on it, isn't there?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, there's a heck of a lot on it. I'm pleased for what you want to see in tennis, not just in women's tennis, but it seems to be something that is unfortunately played women's tennis very recently. You want to see people regaining or gaining the world number one position by doing something positive rather than sort of a default from somebody else doing something negative or failing to do what they did last year or whatever, which is been the case a few times with Kerber and Serena exchanging the world number one position. So whoever does it will have earned it, and it'll be exciting that there's a new number one potentially, and also we know already a brand new Grand Slam champion. So yeah, it's exciting times. I still look at Yelena Ostapenko and think, though, that you're the real deal. I really do. I'm not saying that she's going to win this French Open, but also there is a sort of portion of my gut that says maybe Yelena Ostapenko will win the French Open. I don't know. There's just something about her that's so, well, I said it all in last night's podcast with Chris Bradnam, that is so feisty and sort of precocious without being annoying. All the traits that are required to win a Grand Slam as a teenager, although she won't be a teenager come Saturday because she turns 20
she's
tomorrow.
She's 20, yeah.
20, well, actually, tomorrow, yeah. She's 20 minutes away from turning 20, actually, David. And fun fact for you, both she and her opponent tomorrow, Tamara Bachynsky, will be celebrating their birthdays. That doesn't happen
very
often,
good
does
fun
it?
Fact. Yeah, so she's 20 minutes away from turning 20. I'm 20 years past and more turning 20. Anyway, Yelena Ostapenko, incidentally, great little line that came up on social media. Ben Rothenberg quoting this guy, Fierce Tennis, who says that Yelena Ostapenko could win her first tour-level title at the French Open. And the last player to do that was Gustavo Kuerten in 1997. And he did it on the day that Ostapenko was born.
Oh, my goodness. I love those stats, facts so much. It has to happen.
So we'll see. 20 years on from,
that's
from Bugo in his... in his Brazilian yellow and blue outfit and the curly hair winning the title. You know, I'd barely heard of Guga Curtin when he won that title. It just goes to show, doesn't it, what a bolt from the blue that was. And Ostapenko, you're right. I mean, she's so fearless. It'll be very interesting. So come on, let's have a quick prediction then. Yeah, you've obviously got Halep to still win the title. But what about Ostapenko and Baczynski? You think Ostapenko?
Oh, do I though?
They've never played each other before.
Do you know what though? Meeting. I really like Tamir Bish. I have all the time in the world.
That's an irrelevance.
Tamir Baczynski. I'm really struggling to. What's the weather going to be like tomorrow? It's going to be nice and sunny, and I'm going to go for Ostapenko just to keep things fun because if she has. Yeah, I'm going to go for Ostapenko. There you go.
I'm going to go for Baczynski. I think she will just be that little bit too solid for her. And you never quite know which Ostapenko is going to turn up, frankly. And I think Baczynski will have a little bit too much know-how for her. But then I would have said that ahead of Wozniacki against Ostapenko as well. So frankly, Catherine Whittaker, I haven't got a clue, quite clearly, as I've been proving throughout the French Open. What we have been able to do, though, is bring you a tennis podcast every single day of this tournament so far. In huge part to Catherine Whittaker because she's absolutely fallen asleep at the moment over there in Paris. And yet she's still doing this. So well done, Catherine. Keep going. Go and have some sleep. Anything else you want to add before we sign off for this one?
Well, no, we didn't do predictions for the second women's semi.
Well, you've already said who you think
is going to
win. It's going to be Simona Halep.
Yeah, you haven't.
I'm going to go Halep as well.
Okay.
I think that 4-1 record is quite compelling.
But you didn't go for Halep in the final, did you? What final did you go for before the tournament?
Well, to be honest, I the reason I didn't pick Halep is because I thought she was injured. She's not.
Yeah.
She's clearly not injured.
You had the same information as I did, David.
No, I'm not trying to say that I don't deserve a good kicking over this and that you don't deserve credit. You do.
Can we talk about something else I deserve a bit of credit for?
No, we can't. Right. You've been listening to the Tennis Podcast brought to you. So what's that then?
Well, I wake up to rumours this morning on Twitter that Goran Ivanišević is going to be joining the Novak Djokovic coaching team. And I gleefully sent you a screenshot of these rumours on Twitter. And you said, well, it's probably just silly people that listen to the Tennis Podcast and are silly enough to put that out there as... sort of substantiated rumour. But they have been flying around the press room and I would be terribly disappointed if this ends up being a rumour that I have started myself.
But no, you wouldn't be disappointed at all. You'd be delighted.
Well, I want it to be true. And if it's something I've started myself, then it's probably not true. Certainly the rumour was out there this morning in more than one... source, completely unconfirmed, but the rumour is out there.
The rumour is out there because we started it on the show. That's
no
why it's out.
No one's listening in after what we have to say. Come on.
True.
It's alarming if they are. Anyway.
Nobody listens to this nonsense, do they? I mean, you know, all these people on Twitter who try to pretend that they listen. It's a load of nonsense, isn't it? Anyway, if there is anybody out there, thanks for listening. Catherine, go and have a good night's kip. And hopefully we'll be back for a day 12 tennis podcast. Now, listen, you lot, go on our Instagram page. We're posting all sorts on there. Yeah. Catherine doing a job with
really
the US Book.
We
posted some cheese tonight. Cheese board. I don't think you know about that yet, do you, Catherine? We've also... posted also, well, just go and have a look. Anyway, go and have a look.
Yeah,
Catherine looking really irritated by me.
Yeah,
and do leave us a review on iTunes if you've enjoyed these tennis podcasts, because that way lots of other people find out about them, and we just, you know, we like that, so do it. Anyway, go and have a sleep, everybody. You've got about, what, 12 hours from now until the tennis starts again. The French Open, semi-finals, it's coming your way.
Just made me feel exhausted, David.
All right, well, go to bed. All right, you hang up. I'll carry on. I'll just do a little bit of a monologue on my own. You've been listening to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with our friends from Eurosport, of which Catherine will be on their airwaves tomorrow, bringing you all the very latest. And we'll speak to you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.